Welcome back to Questions with Crocker and her husband. Hi, Shane.
Hey.
So I'm just going to be completely honest here. This is like our third attempt in recording a podcast because we got started two other times. And one, I forgot to start the actual audio recording. And the other one, the battery died on my computer. So we are learning as we go.
We are definitely learning. There's opportunity for a lot of improvement on the technical side.
Opportunity for learning and growing is there. Also communicating well, because I know the frustration was there, but I appreciate you continuing to show up and try to make this work. And we are getting good success. So you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and we've actually had some good reviews. People are actually downloading the podcast and listening, and we're getting questions come in. So I'm really excited to answer one of the questions today that we got from one of the podcast listeners. And also
this podcast listener a relative?
It is not. And I know our initial reviews that we had that were coming in were from family, because thank you, family. They love us and support us. But we've actually gotten several reviews from people I don't know at all. And nice. They said nice things. So that was awesome and amazing. So if you guys like what you hear, if you want to be educated in a fun way about vet med, behind the scenes, everything vet related, then make sure that you go to Spotify or Apple, like, share, leave a review. That would help us out a lot. Or YouTube. We have YouTube and you can actually watch us on there, interact. Shane doesn't ever look at the camera though. Yeah. I do. So it's really hard to look at yourself on camera for that long, but we're making it work. I have to say that I'm a little tired. Are you tired?
Mm-hmm.
We just had a vacation. Why are we so tired?
I don't know. I think we have kids.
It's because when you vacation with children, it's not actually a vacation. No. So on vacation, we went to Idaho.
Yes.
Which would not have been my first thought when I was thinking of a vacation, but they have a beautiful area called Coeur d'Alene. And I think I said it right. And it was amazing on the water, stayed in a house, celebrated my dad's 70th birthday and our son's 7th because they share a birthday, which is really fun.
And some Father's Day activities.
Yes. You were there and we celebrated you.
I was there for Father's Day, yes.
What did we do on Father's Day? Why don't you tell everyone?
We went to the alpaca farm.
Was that at the top of your list?
It was on the list.
So we did go to the alpaca farm.
It was a lot of fun.
It was fun. You only spent half the time in the car with our youngest, who was cold and wanted to read a book instead. But
he saw enough alpacas and miniature horses.
He was good to go. But we got to hold the baby goat. So that was amazing. And highly recommend the alpaca farm tour if you are ever in Idaho on vacation. We could start a whole vacation trip advisor thing. But the other part of the vacation was we did some hiking. We went out and played wiffle ball, a lot of boys in our family. And there was something that I saw that frustrated me. And I almost turned into a Karen. Do you remember what this was?
Refresh my memory.
I'm glad that you are so in tune and pay attention to my emotions. But we're walking. It's beautiful. We're outside, big open grassy area. And what happens? But a dog comes running by and there is no owner in sight. And everyone is trying to catch the dog. Every other dog is on leashes. And I notice that this is an intact male dog that is loose and off leash. And that just about sent me over the edge. Do you know why?
Why was it intact?
No.
What causes it to be intact?
No.
What are we talking about? We talk about intact.
That's actually a great question. So for people not in veterinary medicine, intact means that the male dog still has testicles, which means he still has high levels of testosterone, which also means he is more prone to getting in fights, to running off, to getting hit by cars. We see those in the ER a lot. So my ER vet side kind of kicked in on vacation, and I kind of watched this dog really closely until the owner showed up, and they did not put him on a leash. They're like, oh, he's fine. And I just kept thinking of all the things that I would see him or another dog that he went up to and did something to in the ER for. So it was kind of hard to relax in some of those moments, but I tried my best.
I'm glad.
I
was not aware of any of that going on, I'll be honest.
I think it's one of those things that if you don't see it all the time, you don't think about it. But when you see the worst case scenario all the time, that's why. And that's why we are anxiety ridden if we're in veterinary medicine.
I feel like I should have had our son on a leash, to be honest with you.
I don't know that that's legal at the age that he's at. But okay, so we're going to get into a little bit of housekeeping. We are back from vacation, jumping back into work. We have a lot going on at the hospital. We are trying to finalize renovation plans. We have some new team members coming on board this next month. So I'm really excited to kind of get more into that in the next couple episodes. If you have any questions about the veterinary hospital that we own together, make sure to reach out to us on social media, drop us those questions.
No questions about renovation, please. I get enough of those at home.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
It's a little bit of a sore subject.
Yes.
I mean, I love you to death, but it is a slow process doing the renovation. And that was part of our kind of initial, I was very straightforward about, if we buy this hospital, we're going to have to renovate it because I need a little more openness and light in my life when I practice veterinary medicine.
We are in agreement.
Okay. And you're working on it. So we've only had a couple tense conversations about it. And we know that we're on the same page that it needs to happen. It's going to happen. It's just a little slower than I think either of us want.
Yes.
Okay. You're just more patient than me?
I'm not answering that. I'm not going down that path. Let's answer some questions from viewers.
I should change this or that to something versus renovating the hospital, but we're instead going to have you spell something. Are you good with that?
At 10 o'clock at night?
It's not 10 o'clock.
It is.
Oh, it is.
It is 10:07.
It is 10:07
I'm in PM. OT, overtime.
We don't go to bed till late anyways, so.
Not by choice.
That's what you get from marrying a night owl.
Yes.
Okay. So I would like you to spell hyperkalemia.
Hyperkalemia.
Hyperkalemia. Yes.
H-Y-P-E-R-K-L-E-lemia. M-I-A.
That was actually close. That was close. So everything in veterinary medicine is derived from Latin. And so hyper meaning
high. I don't speak Latin.
I actually took it in high school.
We did not talk about that in finance.
I took it in high school. It's very helpful in vet school. But hyper means high. K is for potassium and lemia is in the blood. So high potassium levels in the blood. Do you know why that is important to know in veterinary medicine?
Nope.
So high potassium happens if you can't urinate, most commonly in male cats that are blocked and can't pee, which is a true emergency. There's actually not a ton of true emergencies in veterinary medicine, and that is one of them. So if your cat can't pee, potassium levels get high, it can actually cause your heart to stop and they can die. So that's a true emergency, and you need to get to your vet or come see us right away.
I'd rename that Mr. Bobby.
Our cat,
you know what our cat had?
Yeah, our cat did have that, but he does great on food now, so knock on wood. He's doing great. Okay. So speaking of emergencies and pets, I had a question come in. And so I wanted to answer it and I want to hear your input on it. So they asked, what are the top 3 to 5 things that pet owners can do to create a good working relationship with their veterinarian?
Great question.
Are you?
I've never brought an animal to the vet.
I was about to say, I don't even know.
I can add zero value to this question.
Oh my gosh. I like how I'm talking about the value of veterinary care and you are like not the pet owner in the household, essentially.
No.
So let's just talk about you grew up and there was vets in your hometown and you guys would go.
Probably.
For like the rabies vaccine? Like what was the level of vet care that you experienced?
I remember walking in and it used to smell like pee pretty bad. So I didn't go to the vet office too often. No, it's actually a really nice clinic now in the small town that I grew up in. And I think they do probably mixed. I know they used to always do mixed animals. They probably still do mixed.
Yeah.
But yeah, we brought our dogs as needed.
Your parents actually take their dog now because, of course, their dog has allergies and other things. And so with my urging, they've gone and now they spend more money on pet allergies. And
two very geriatric animals at this point.
Yes. The cat, I don't know how much care the cat gets, but cats actually need to go to the vet regularly. So just a plug there for that. But I grew up on the opposite end of the spectrum. We took our animals to the vet for the slightest thing, which actually that exposure probably helped me decide to become a veterinarian. But we took our animals. We had horses at the house that were, you know, horse show horses. So they also were seen a lot. And so we had a really good relationship with our veterinarian. So I think from the pet owner side of things, but also being a vet for 16 years now, I have a lot to say about this. So first off, I want to say that my number one thing is just general respect goes a long ways. So that means if you make an appointment, be on time. That's pretty simple, right? Because appointments run together. If you are not going to show up, please call and cancel your appointment. We get a lot of no-shows in veterinary medicine. I think people panic and they call around and they maybe get in somewhere and make an appointment and then they get in somewhere else sooner. So they just don't show up and they don't realize that that actually takes a spot away from another pet that could have gotten help. And it also, you know, eats into our profit for the day.
Yeah, the finance guys do not like that at all. So if this were top three things that you could do to help the finance guy, show up for your appointment.
Show up for your appointment, yes. So those basics of just being respectful when
but
you...
I think that mutual respect relationship goes the opposite direction as well. So if you have an appointment block for a patient, you probably need to make sure that you see that patient in a timely manner as well.
Ooh, okay. I see what you're saying there. I agree. For the most part, I think you need to communicate why you might not see them on time if something happens. So the biggest thing is, you know, someone comes in with a pet for coughing, right? You're like, cool, coughing, maybe not a big deal. You end up doing a chest x-ray and the dog has cancer and it turns into a longer conversation. So perhaps the next person doesn't get seen exactly on time, but it's not like you were planning on that. So we try to schedule the best we can. But I think the biggest thing from, I agree, our side of things as a hospital is to communicate. I'm really sorry you're having to wait. The other appointment, you know, had a couple things happen. The doctor needs to spend a little more time with them. Is there anything we can get you? You know, can we answer any questions for you? Let's get as much done as we can before the doctor gets in here. I think it's all about communication. Do you agree? Okay. So the general respect is huge. The other second point I would make is please bring your records. Even better, have them emailed or sent beforehand. There's so much time wasted in a new client or new puppy or new kitten appointment going through past records because you don't give vaccines until you know what's already been given and when it was given, and you have to plan everything out. You need to see what the weight's been doing. You need to see like when they last got their heartworm and flea prevention. And that takes time to get that loaded into the system. So everything's electronic these days and people still will show up with a stack of records that you have to go through in your 20, 30 minute appointment. And it just eats into the time.
So if you were to get records sent over in advance of the appointment, when do you actually look at it? Or does a technician look at it? Or what happens there?
So the CSRs, the receptionists, are actually trained to look at the records. And they can look at when vaccines were due next because that prints on pretty much every set of records that's sent over as a referral or sent over and shared with somebody. And they can put that into the system. So then instead of having to flip through records, you're actually pulling it up on the computer and it's already saying, okay, they're due for this or they got this at this point in time and everything's kind of right in front of you. Instead of having to go through and interpret different handwriting or different things that the pet has had going on.
So another question, I'm curious about this now. So we have electronic system. Everything in our place is electronic.
Yes.
So if they bring in a big stack of medical records, what actually gets put into our system?
So
we scan that in or we...
Ideally, we scan everything in, yes. Sometimes...
That sounds like a waste of time.
Well, if they send it over as a PDF, then we just attach it and it's an attachment. But yes, we usually will scan everything in. So it is very difficult when people have been... They're bringing an older pet that's been seen for a really long time and you're putting every single record in. I will say it's uncommon for people to go to the same veterinarian for years and years and years. So usually when you get records, you're only getting a year or two of records because people move, people change, and that's a reason why they're finding somebody new. So you don't often get a ton of records, but it is not the most efficient system. I know when you worked in human healthcare, there was actually sharing of records, right? Mm-hmm. Between different entities. And so people could just pull up a patient when they're at the specialist and see what had been going on with the GP. There was no need to, you know, send records over or carry over a stack of records. And I wonder if eventually that would happen in the animal world. But it would be a big endeavor.
Yeah, I mean, the cost to stand up that infrastructure to tie every system together is very costly.
Pretty significant.
Yeah. So in human medicine, a lot of the big systems kind of took over that role and would integrate that into their software and then push it out to the other physicians.
Okay, so that makes sense. So probably not going to happen in veterinary medicine, but if you can think ahead when you make the appointment, if you can just tell them, hey, this is the vet I was going to before, we will call. We'll call and get records sent over.
But they can actually get records out of the patient portal as well. I mean, almost all these systems have patient portals.
If they have electronic records, some still have paper, and if you have access to it, so you've signed up or you know your email that's been used for it, you certainly can go look up, which is great because on the weekends, if you're trying to take your pet to board and your vet's already closed, you can actually have access to when vaccines were done and different things that those facilities are going to want to know before they let you go in there.
I feel like we've had a lot of positive feedback on their ability to go in and see that information, understand what vaccines they've already had, schedule an appointment if they need to, all electronically. So I think the world's moving in that direction.
I agree. And I think that a lot of times I will now tell people you can go online and do these things and they prefer it, at least with the younger generation of pet owners. So speaking of other things that you can do that will create a good working relationship, we are on number three. And number three, I think you'll like, it's pay your bills. I mean, it seems simple, right?
Another way to have the finance team excited.
So I think that pet owners need to understand that veterinary medicine is not subsidized like human healthcare, and you are expected to pay at the time of service. Now, if you have pet insurance, a lot of times you can get reimbursed for that, but most places are going to require upfront payment. There are options for care credit, scratch pay, which are based off of your credit. But as we know, not everyone has good credit, and that's not always an option. So I will tell people, and especially when I work in the ER, it's not great and comfortable talking about finances, but it's really important that you talk upfront about what you have available so that the vet can kind of work within your means. The worst thing that happens is you say do everything and then you don't have an idea of what that costs and you go to check out and it's a very, very large amount. And I think that miscommunication causes a lot of problems. But because of how vet offices work, you need to pay your bills. And we've both seen accounts receivable that were ridiculous. And I don't know how some of those businesses were still running.
I don't either. I mean, obviously we don't extend credit. Everything is paid at time of service for the most part. I think we extend credit to employees of ours, things like that. But for most customers, all that's done up front or, like you said, using a third-party finance company. And again, we get paid immediately. If they have pet insurance, we get paid immediately and they get reimbursed. So I don't understand how clinics that are still holding those accounts receivable, how they stay in business.
Do you remember, so when I started out in equine practice after my internship, I actually saw the accounts receivable for that practice. And it had been around for 40 years.
Yeah.
And it was over $2 million was the accounts receivable. And my mind was blown. But I had so many people, I would go out in the truck, I would do all the work. You know, they would know how much it was going to cost. Like we would, I would be super upfront about it. And they would still say, oh, doc just says he can put it on the bill. Like I'll pay next month. I'll send him a check, whatever. And it was no wonder. And obviously he ran it really differently and, you know, had found a way to make it work because it was around for so long. But it gave me anxiety just knowing how much accounts receivable there was from all those years. So it is something that is not fun to talk about. I wish we could just do things for free and help every pet and not have to even have the conversation, but it's a part of being a veterinarian and working in this profession. So I think that pet owners need to understand that we are going to be more and extend more grace and kindness to the people that pay their bills regularly. And then if that emergency comes up, there is ways to find a way to help you a little bit more. But if I met you for the first time and you tell me do everything, but you don't have any money, it's going to be hard for me to extend you credit because of the way and how tight our finances are in a small private practice.
Yeah, I think, and I've heard you talk about this a lot, given ranges, you know, in accurate ranges, right?
Yes.
The low end and the high end of what potentially could happen. And then if they agree to those numbers, working within that budget, if they say, look, I just don't have it, still finding a way to practice the best medicine you can to you know, meet the budget they have available to them. So again, that transparent conversation, I think is very, very important.
Well, speaking of communication, we'll go to point number four. So point number four in how pet owners can create a good working relationship with their veterinarian is they can communicate respectfully. And that means listening actively, but also asking questions. I feel like I see this a lot with younger vets where they go in and they have a diagnosis or they have a plan and they just are laying it all out and it's kind of rapid fire and they're throwing out really big words. And, you know, they leave the room and the owner looks at the technician and they say, wait, what were they talking about? What's that disease?
Hypercalcemia. What was the word?
Hyperkalemia. Yeah,
they're probably saying that.
Yeah, but you can easily lose an owner. And so you have to be able to kind of allow them room to speak up and to say, you know, what they need to say and to ask the questions they need to ask. And I'm fine if owners come in and they say, you know, I went on the internet and it said this. And I will tell them the internet usually has the miracle stories and then the worst stories, right, of everything that you can ever look up. But I will listen to what they say, listen to what they've heard, listen to their concerns. And then hopefully they will do that in return. The hard thing is when they just come in and say, well, I read all these things, but they don't want to hear what your experience and what your schooling has ever taught you. And it quickly will shut down the veterinarian from our side if there's no willingness to listen.
Makes sense. And how often do you say, hey, that could be it, but we need to run tests first?
I say that a fair amount. I say it could be actually all these different things. It's interesting, you know, if a dog comes in drinking and peeing a lot, people automatically are like, it's a UTI. It's a urinary tract infection. That's what it is. She just needs antibiotics. There is about five different things I could tell you that it could be that are not going to respond to antibiotics and are pretty serious. And if you just throw antibiotics at it, that pet's going to get sick pretty quickly. So usually I will say, you know, it certainly could be that. And honestly, I hope that's what it is, because UTI, that's going to be the easiest thing for me to fix and to help your pet. However, it could also be kidney failure. It could also be Cushing's disease. It could also be leptospirosis. There's all these other things that it could be. And if it's one of those things, it's much more serious. And so we really need to run blood work. And
there's your dog scratching. He might need some antibiotics.
He might need some allergy medications. But I will tell people, let's run some blood work, because we can rule in or out a lot of those things pretty quickly. But that is said a fair amount. And one of the big tips I will tell young veterinarians is, instead of saying, do you have any questions? Which I think a lot of owners automatically are like, no,
I have nothing.
Right. I'll say, what questions do you have? So just changing that little phrase really makes a difference, because people will actually think, okay, what questions do I have? Instead of a yes or no answer, you'll get a more complete answer. And sometimes they still say, I don't have any questions, but I feel like I get more response from them when I lead into it that way and I'm closing an appointment out. Is that like a sales tactic?
Probably.
Probably someone wrote that in a book and I read it, but
I'm sure I gave you the book to read.
All the business books that I own.
How to Win Friends and Influence People.
But I do think that those are some small changes. Is there anything you would add to my list? So I had, you know, be on time, don't no show, basically be respectful when you're making an appointment and make sure you follow through. Bring your records, hopefully send them electronically or have us call ahead of time. Listen, actively listen and ask questions and pay your bills. Is there anything else that you can think of that would really set you up for success as a pet owner in a relationship with a veterinarian?
Yeah, I think going back to the question thing, you probably ought to have some questions kind of thought through before you enter, right? So I know when I take the kids to the doctor, because you're at work, I never have any questions at all because I haven't thought through what I should ask in advance of. Now, when you prep me going into the appointment, I usually have a couple of questions I need to actually ask. So I think maybe thinking about things that are on the top of your mind, you know, before you show up just to get the vaccines or whatever, is probably a good thing to place to start.
Yeah, because they're going to give you space to ask those questions. But if you say nothing, they're going to get the appointment done.
Yeah, because, get out of there, move on to the next.
Yeah, there's plenty of other things that we have to do in the hospital. So, and you usually see pets, you know, once, twice a year. And so that's your opportunity.
That was my next question, is how often should they actually come in to be seen?
So it really depends. Obviously, you see puppies and kittens younger because they're having their vaccine appointments regularly up until about 12 to 16 weeks. But then you're not going to see them until they're a year old. And it's really annually until they hit kind of 7, 8, and when they get a little more geriatric. And then a lot of my senior pets, especially if they have issues, I'm going to recommend seeing them every 6 months so we can monitor weight and we can really dive into small changes that we'll see happen that can really affect their quality of life.
And what about those that are kind of skeptical to actually go to the vet?
Well, the question would be, why are they skeptical? I think a lot of people don't see the value as much of like preventative care. So they wait until their pet is sick. And I think they're also worried about the cost. And really, you know, my argument for that is it is much cheaper to give the parvo vaccine than to treat parvo. Much cheaper to give heartworm prevention, $15-$20 a month, than to treat a dog for heartworms, which is months of treatment and easily is over $1,000. So I get that sometimes that initial one lump sum seems like a lot, but when you look at it, you know, compared to some of these diseases and these things we're trying to catch early, it can make a really big difference financially. But they don't see the value as much of the exam, the preventative care, where every single day I see a pet that has benefited from a veterinarian, you know, really paying attention to things that we are trained to see and to catch. Things like heart murmurs that owners can't catch. The other day, I did surgery on our friend's dog that a splenic tumor was diagnosed on his annual exam. Felt the belly, could feel a mass in this dog's stomach, and really saved this pet's life because they went and did their annual exam. So there's a lot of value in that, in the education that occurs. And I think that it's really, really important, obviously. Okay, so I think that we left pet owners with some good little tidbits. And if there's any veterinarians out there that have some other tips that they would want to share, I think that'd be great. Obviously,
I would be curious to hear what other vet or support staff, what they would add to this list. I'm sure they have some very
specific
items.
I mean, there's going to be things that are way more specific, like...
What about that client that is always great to you, but terrible with the support staff?
I was about to say that...
They get fired immediately when you find out about it.
I think the support staff takes the brunt of people, especially like up front, of people being rude and short with them. And then in the rooms, you know, the technical staff can really get hammered. And then I walk in and yes, people are like a 180. So a pet owner should know that we know about those things and we hear about those things. And in my practice specifically, that's not tolerated. Even if you treat me well, you don't get to treat the rest of the team not well. And that will be grounds to be fired. And maybe that's something important for pet owners to know, that you can be fired from your regular veterinarian. It's usually because you were abusive or because you were aggressive in some way, or you were threatening. If I have someone threaten to like smear us on social media, that's immediate grounds for the relationship ending because the trust has ended. And so there's a lot of vets and there's a lot of opportunity for people to find care for their pets. And I think they do need to realize that, yes, it is a service industry, and we rely on our customers, but there's enough pet owners out there now that we can really curate the type of pet owner we want. And
I think that street is two-way as well, right? Yes. So if you are a pet owner and you don't have what you feel is a good relationship with your vet or your technical team, it's okay to go out there and search for a better fit.
Yes.
So I think sometimes maybe people think that because they're convenient or they've got good reviews online or whatever, that's where I need to go, but that may not be a good, you know, fit.
Well, so. And really what's going to be best for your pet is to have a trusting, respectful relationship with your veterinarian. And if you don't have that, I agree. I encourage you to look elsewhere. And if you're only going once, twice a year, drive a little bit further to find somebody you really connect with and that you feel like gets you and really cares about your pet. Because you're a team in this to give your pet the best life that they possibly can have. So
makes sense.
Are you going to start being the pet owner that?
No.
Maybe by the end of this podcast, we will convince Shane to love all the animals as much as I do and the kids do. So, well, I appreciate you coming on here with me.
I'm glad I could add a lot of value to this question.
You did. I think I like hearing the side of kind of the pet owner and the consumer, I guess, because you don't really think about it that much from this seat. So I think it was helpful. So if you have more questions for us, make sure you check out Questions with Crocker on all the social media platforms or my website, drcrockerpetvet.com. And
my Instagram. come find me.
Shane doesn't, no, he's not active on social media. So don't come find him. But you also can like or share, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That would really help us out. And thanks so much for joining us. Have a wonderful day.